Nantucket to the shores of Orange Beach and all points in between. An insider's perspective on Alabama politics. It's the Jeff Poor Show.
I don't think Hank done it this way.
Welcome to the Jeff Poor Show on FM Talk 106.5. Thanks for being with us on this Thursday morning. We're cracking right along as the week proceeds. 251-343-0106. If you want to be in touch with me, your show host, all you got to do is text. Sorry, I had an extra additional microphone open there, but I got that rectified. Coming up on the program today, former State Senator Trip Pittman in about a half hour. There's a lot of silliness kind of going on in our Alabama politics right now, particularly with one David Bronner of the RSA, but some other things. And I'm gonna try to settle the crazy down a little today. The speculation, maybe got a little ahead of our skis here, but we can talk about that throughout the program. Parker Griffith, the official Democrat response of the Jeff Poor Show. And I wanted to get him on only because it's the like month long Jimmy Carter funeral, but just talk about that. Watching that right now, you have all the presidents sitting in the front pews of the National Cathedral right now. You got Trump, Obama, W. Bush. I see Biden. I see Clinton. I see behind them Al Gore, and I see Mike Pence. Trump and Pence, a little distant these days, I suppose. But watching this right now, there's a lot of images that you don't really see that often. Also on the program today, in the 11 o'clock hour, Rusty Glover, the former state senator, potentially the future state senator or state Senate candidate, will be with us. But let's talk to him a little bit about this. I think this will be a good discussion about daylight savings time. And if you guys recall, he was one of the guys, he was one of the lawmakers who tried to get it permanent in Alabama. And we can talk about the history, why do we do it? And he also wants to say, you know, talk about the arguments for and against keeping the clocks where they are and why this idea that if you have like a school children who take the school bus and you're going to send them out to the bus stop and it's still going to be dark outside and why that isn't necessarily applicable anymore. So we'll get into that in the 11 o'clock hour. Like I said, you want to be in touch with me, your show host, 251-343-0106. That's how we get in touch, or that's how we communicate on the Jeff Poor Show. Something I think is just, and I know this seems like another country, guys, and seems like another world away. But I really want to spend some more time on these California fires. And there's something going on here politically. And we can watch this. This is like very important to me. It should be important to you. So I think people in California, the elites, let's say, those who live in these multi-million dollar homes, with these great panoramic views of the Pacific Ocean and the L.A. skyline and, the North Hollywood Hills or whatever. Democrats, right? Mostly. They worship at the altar of Democratic Party politics. And they bought into all of these virtues of, you know, diversity, equity, and inclusion, and trying to social engineer everything down to a T, and using government as a way to create the perfect society with the right amount of racial diversity. And not necessarily like mandating it to you and I, but from within. And just treating it like there's no meritocracy anymore. We can't look at people based on their merit. We got to look at them And it's not, we're not, it's like a reverse racism or whatever. But like, you're looking around and you want the best possible services. And they're kind of realizing, hey, all of this is, these are like the elites at the very top of the scale, guys. Multi-generational Hollywood types. Sarah Foster really kind of hit home there. She's the daughter of David Foster, produces a lot of shows. And these are seismic shifts where I think these left wingers that have been just sort of part of like the institutional left for years are starting to realize some of this stuff doesn't work. I will read you this quote. We pay the highest taxes in California. Our fire hydrants were empty. Our vegetation was overgrown, brush not cleared. Our reservoirs were emptied by our governor because tribal leaders wanted to save fish. Our fire department budget was cut by our mayor, but thank God drug addicts are getting their drug kits. And she says, at mayor of L.A., at Gavin Newsom, resign. Your far-left policies have ruined our state and also our party. Our party, so she's a Democrat. This is like indicative of what's going to happen here, I think. These people in L.A., they're Democrats. I mean, they're blue. They always vote blue. They're just like, you just go and you just vote Democrat. Doesn't really matter. So when they start to rebuild, guys, this is what is going to change. They're going to realize how hard it is to get permits. They're going to realize that you've got to use like carbon neutral building construction material. They're gonna, all of these things that California has done to try to force this climate change agenda. You had to use this minority contractor. All of this social engineering they've done is going to catch up with them because people will just want to rebuild and get on with their lives. They're not going to be able to because California is trying to create for the last 30 years this perfect little utopia. Paradise on Earth. And with the, but with their set of criteria. I think people are going to see that. I'm like, this doesn't work. We just want our homes back. We just want our businesses back. And you can't run this city. It's like an Ayn Rand novel that people are going to wake up to. They're going to see this. They're going to be like, you know, this big government. It just, everything that goes wrong in a left-wingy sort of society, it just feels like the end of Atlas Shrugged. Except, it doesn't end like Atlas Shrugged. I think in the United States, in America, the pedigree is this. Well, we did the wrong thing over and over and over and over again. We're going to do the right thing now. So while the, I think this Jimmy Carter stuff is going on, you look at California, this is going to be like a, you know, the next year or so, you're going to hear about this. Now, look, we saw how they rebuilt Katrina after Katrina in New Orleans. It wasn't like there was a significant shift in the politics of New Orleans. I mean, they did elect Mitchell Andrews as mayor, their first white mayor in a long time. But for now, you got this, the backdrop is this around the country, this populist move back to sort of an American-centric approach. And then in some of these hardest hit places around the country, I mean, if it wasn't the riots and Black Lives Matter, you know, and all that, it didn't really move the needle, but this could move the needle. And why does this matter also? These are the people who make your pop culture. And maybe it's going to make them think twice about trying to splice in whatever left-wing propaganda messaging into your next Disney film or whatever. And all this stuff isn't really working. But I think it's important just to kind of take a 10,000-foot view of that right now in our politics before, like, the Trump years get underway here in a few days. And Trump's got his work cut out for him because people, I mean, you just watched Joe Biden in California just stumbling around there talking about his great-grandkid and just sit on another planet. And the new era, the dawning of a new day starts on January 20th, a Monday. And it's, you know, people are going to start expecting more. And hopefully, this is important. If Donald Trump does deliver satisfactory results, what are Democrats going to do? Like, you know, even in 17, with all of those headwinds, and you think about the economy, how the economy was doing well. And I remember Bill Maher saying this on his HBO show that, you know, I hate to say this, but I just feel like the economy, if it just needs to take a hit because we cannot have this man be president for four more years. And he took a lot of heat for that. He should have taken a lot of heat for that. If he gets the economy right, he gets some of this, he shows these people in California, they're in charge of like our pop culture, that this is how you do it. What do Democrats say to that? 251-343-0106 is the text line. But if you start showing results right now, you start showing that there is a better way to do things, that you don't need, you don't need to micromanage it to a T to achieve some kind of perfect little society, that you just got to let human nature run its course and give people the best opportunity for the best quality of life, then you'll win all the elections instead of having it mandated by the government. So the government tries to mandate it, it doesn't work. And you can just point to California pre-fire. Like, look, we only expect so much out of our government. I harp on this all the time about Alabama and roads and schools and criminal justice. We only expect so much of your government, but they can't get the simple things done. If they can't get the simple things done, then it's time to look for something else. And they're all focused on other things. They're all focused on, right now, that's the left. It's just all of this stuff cooked up in a classroom somewhere, some blue ribbon panel thinking about it, and it just doesn't work. Human nature, human society and civilization, been around for thousands of years. You can't just like mandate a formula for it and expect it to compute whatever it is you're trying to achieve. There's too many variables. And this is the waking point for those people out there on the West Coast. Let's get a break in here. We'll be right back. This is the Jeff Poore Show on FM Talk 106.5. Welcome back to the Jeff Poore Show on FM Talk 106.5. Thanks for staying with us on this Thursday morning. Coming up in the next segment, Trip Pittman will be with us. So, former state senator, my way, We'll talk to him. Some of the, I don't know, I'm still in battle mode, I guess you would call it, with one David Bronner, one of the most powerful men in the state. And I still can't get over this point yesterday. Stephanie Holden Smith on the program talking about this. And he has been in government for 50 years. And he's coming after me, who hasn't even been on this planet for 50 years, and others, API, Alpha, other colleagues at 1819 News, for being, you know, kind of opposed to gambling as a solution to problems. And he's been in charge. He's like one of the most powerful people in Alabama. The state still has the same old problems. It's not up to us to come up with solutions, but I just find that to be very exhausting. Let's go through some text here. Jeff, what do you think how the mayor's race is going? I don't just think the city needs a woman mayor. I don't know about that. I mean, right now, Connie Hudson, I would say she's the front runner of the, well, she's the only real announced candidate, but even among the maybes. She's been around a long time. She's got a little bit of name ID. The only thing that I would say about her, and I don't know who's going to emerge from the rest of the city, Tim, and I'm just looking at this, and I am not an expert on Mobile municipal politics, is that West Mobile candidate has a very difficult path. It's, you know, I find that I guess the mayor's maybe you would think come more out of the middle of the city, the heart of the city, or not necessarily downtown, but midtown, right around in there somewhere. It's be very tribal neighborhood. And can't somebody from West Mobile expand, can they make inroads into the city? She'll dominate. Connie Hudson will dominate like Cottage Hill corridor and, you know what, the some of those parts out in West Mobile. Or she's got a work cut out for her. I mean, even Spring Hill, I would think, a little bit. Jeff, the California elite wanted a certain way until it affects them. This fire is affecting them. So you're right. We will see changes out of this fire. I think so. It's like, was it like the Great Plague or whatever, the bubonic plague, and then the Great Fire of London, like, killed off the plague? This is more symbolism, though. But you got to rebuild. And I just think there's going to be this awakening. Like, we want to rebuild. We want to, you know, get back to normal. But Gavin Newsom's like making us wait 3 years for a building permit, or, you know, we're not able to get construction materials because we don't have enough bio-friendly diesel for the truck to come down the road. You know, it's just these little things like that that they need to get out of the way and let progress take place. But people are going to come and realize this is not a good way of running your society. You can't order your society based on these feel-good platitudes, because it's not going to work. It's not efficient. And we're a very impatient society. And these people in California, this is going to be a shift. Now, they're not going to be right-wing, you know, Tea Party libertarians or whatever, but they're not going to buy into this one-size-fits-all, we're all one community stuff either. That big bloated bureaucracy doesn't run efficiently. It's got just watch. I mean, we got a front row seat for this.
And I can't get to sleep at night. The parking lot's so
sorry,
loud,
still a little raspy. But conditions are improving here at the Faro Bureau. 251-343-0106. Got a ton of texts I'm going to get to later in the program. This is the Jeff Porch Show on FM Talk 106.5.
Somebody take me home.
We'll be right back.
living on the road, my friend.
Welcome back to the Jeff Poor Show at FM Talk 106.5. Thank you for being with us on this Thursday morning. If you want to be in touch with the show, the best way to do so, well, probably the only way to do so, 251-343-0106. Send me a text message, and I will read it on the air. I try to get to all the text messages, even if you are quasi-banned from this program there, Mommy Issues. Still to come on the program about an hour from now, Parker Griffith. We're going to talk Jimmy Carter. That's underway right now, the funeral there at the National Cathedral, all the presidents sitting there and the cameras on them, kind of watching the body language. And then in the 11 o'clock hour, former state senator Rusty Glover is going to make a return to the program. It's been a while since we had him on. But we're going to talk about the daylight savings time and what he thinks, you know, where we should go with that. And they're talking about it at a federal level right now. We'll try to get some clarity on that subject. But joining us now, always a pleasure to bring on my good friend from over here on our side of the bay, but former state senator Trip Pittman. Senator, good morning. How you been?
Well, Jeff, I'm doing well, and my son and daughter-in-law just had my wife's and my first grandchild. So we had a little boy, so I got a grandson, so that's really exciting. And everybody's doing well, so we're really excited about that.
I'm glad to hear that, and best wishes on that. Let's start here, and we'll kind of talk about some things. I know one of the topics I know you wanted to get on here, and I did this ever just going perpetual drumbeat about Medicaid expansion. It just seemed like something kind of off in the distance, and Democrats like to talk about it, and it's like if the dog ever caught the car, what would happen? But now you've got Blue Cross Blue Shield talking to county commissions and other, influence peddlers around the state. They want to do this Medicaid expansion light, and that's fine. But what bothers me is now you got it. First, it seems just like a gateway to full flown.
Well, it's not fine. See, that's the problem, is that this is the worst possible scenario, because first of all, you put Blue Cross Blue Shield, who's certainly the kind, and we'll just call them the market leader, or maybe even the only market. And it's a worst possible way to expand, because the way it's been done, they overestimate the people that would enroll in the private plan. They also underestimate drastically who would move into Medicaid. And it's been tried in three states, and two of them, New Hampshire and Iowa, have already abandoned it because it cost a lot more. And the current one that only has it is Arkansas. And, when they estimated it was going to cost, about $600,000 or $700,000 a year, $600 or $700 million a year, and it's costing, three times that. So the problem is that they don't know how many people are going to get into it. They've moved forward with this plan using, I don't know where they've got the numbers, but it doesn't save hospitals. I've discussed with people that the best way to save local hospitals is for local governments to find ways to fund their hospitals, since it is so critical to everybody that needs health care, and it's also great for the economic development. But regardless, this method of expanding is bad, but this all health plan, which has been tried in three states, is worse. Like I said, Arkansas, it was $827 million in estimated cost,
right?
And it actually cost $2.3 billion a year. So, they want to get their toe in, but how many times does government say that something is going to cost this much, or that we're going to have revenue that are come in and offset the cost? You can talk about anything you want to talk about, but the reality is, the people in government, it's not their money, but the people that are using government for whatever program they have, find ways to embellish their, the revenue stream. And so even Blue Cross, it's a nonprofit, has, bunches of people that make lots of money, so they can not show a profit. But it's just a bad decision for Alabama. And a number of people that get on health care are generally able-bodied adults that need to, increase our workforce participation and get out there and get a job. And even Paul Hubbard, a strong Democrat and the head of AEA, told me after, when he and I had a meeting, is that able-bodied adults ought to have to work to eat. And so that comes from a Democrat, a conservative Democrat, relatively speaking. And We just do not need to expand Medicaid. The cost, we've got good budget situation here because of things that were done during previous quadrenniums in the legislature with good leadership. And now we're looking at of adding an expansion, which, you know, and it's also philosophical, Jeff, which we don't talk enough about. This is one of the last vestiges of federalism in which the Supreme Court, Justice Roberts, said, hey, you do not have to expand and become more, you know, more dependent on the federal government.
Well, first point, you talk about the cost projections. In state government right now, they're like batting zero. Look at everything. We're told cost X amount of dollars, and it costs twice as much. And this goes for even, you know, stuff like we would be for, like some of these tax breaks and whatnot. They're just they're lowballing a lot of these numbers. And what bothers me, Senator, is there doesn't seem to be any, like, emotional reaction. The prisons really, really bothers me. You go from $630 million to $1.2 billion. And that's you know, well, you know, inflation, blah, blah, blah. But no, that, I mean, that's so unsatisfactory. And no one seems to be upset. It's almost like this, well, we kind of expected this.
I'm upset about it. You know, I'm upset because in 2014, we had a two-prison deal that came out of conference for $600 million for two prisons. And a former senator from Birmingham got into a petition contest with a former speaker, and the thing died on the last night of the legislature. So that was 600 for two. But by Jeff, you know, you've got to hard bid. You know, some of this design bill may work in the private sector where somebody actually has interest and it's their money on the line. But this design build in the public sector is a fiasco. It's total waste of money, and it's evident by the delays in the construction and the ballooning costs. So if you want to get back the real cost, you hard bid things. You get good designs, you hard bid them, and then if you have to have changes, and if you're going to build two prisons, why don't you build two of them exactly right? At least the person that's building the first one ought to know what their costs are and ought to be very competitive on the second.
Yeah, well, let's just, you know, look at every other project. Look at this I-10 bridge. Look at, you know, they had to call an RSA to do the state house. That would have probably have, you know, soared out of control. It's just, these hard bids and this construction management stuff, is it going to work? I find this to be
just like Medicaid expansion is not going to work.
Yeah.
So anytime, and I'm here from the government, I'm here to help you. But there'll be certain people that you'll help, but who's going to pay? And somebody always pays.
What's this?
The men and women that get up every day and go to work, you know, now they finally cut a little bit on their overtime taxes, and they're going to want to take that away. They finally cut a little bit on their grocery taxes, and now they don't want to do that anymore. You know, it's time the government goes back to working for the men and women that pull the wagon and not for the political class that tries to manipulate anything for their own benefit. And they already have plenty of fair advantages they don't need anymore.
Well, it's this. It's just stop lying to us. You know, like, we don't know what this number is going to be. We're going to tell you this number, and we're going to, just for the sake of political expediency, and get it through the legislature or whatever. But this happens over and over again. It's like, first time, fool me once, you know, shame on you. Fool me twice, shame on me.
You said it the other day, Jeff. People are focused on the national, the Fox News. They don't care about the local, but the local's where they're getting hammered with city, county, you know, state government. And the idea that we do know, you know, if you can look at you look at other states, the 50 laboratories, right? And you look at what they've done, like in this Medicaid expansion, this quote, all health, Medicaid light. And you look at what's happened in the other states that have tried it. And you look at the terrible results that they've had, plus the results that have happened in Medicaid expansion with the numbers that are, you know, turn out to be a lot greater. The cost turns out to be a lot greater without the negative incentives for people to actually get out and work and get a job. Then you know not to do it. When you see the continual cost overruns by the failure to have a hard bid, you know, you would think that somebody would say, you know what, why don't we bid this? But people do want to deceive the public, because the public is busy working and doing things and, you know, taking care of themselves and their families. And they don't have time, like the political class does, to have full-time people, you know, in Montgomery or in Washington, figuring out how to divide up their money.
Well, I watched this, and I just watched what's going on in state government right now. And I've been on the KI, where is KIV crusade here the last few days. But it just seems to be like a lot of fires that need to be put out. And, you know, typically in any state, including this state, this would be something the governor would address directly. She would go, or he would go out and give a press conference or talk about these things. And, Senator, it's been 334 days since Kay Ivey's had an off-scripted moment, according to one of my texters, I guess, who tracks this stuff. But I look at the legislative session's coming up. I don't really know who's running the state right now.
Well, Kay and I go back 30 years to the time I was on the Alabama Commission for Higher Education. You know, she has also adamantly been opposed to Medicaid expansion, so she gets tremendous kudos from me because it's one of the most expensive things you could ever do. I think she has a really good staff. I serve with Bill Poole in the legislature. He's our finance director. I've sat down with him and talked to him numerous times. They do have a handle on what's going on. I think she, by and large, has a good group of people in her cabinet. And I think she's honest and she's got integrity. Now, she seasoned a little bit and slowed down a little bit, that's for sure. Could she do more? But again, you know, in Montgomery, you know, when you become governor, you have a lot of people, a lot of friends, and a lot of people that help you. Sometimes it's not what you do, it's what you don't do. And sometimes it's easier not to do anything than to antagonize or aggravate people that have helped you. Now, in her case, you know, she's not running again because she's termed out. But personally, I think Kay Ivey's been a good governor. Could she engage more personally? Without question. But I do think she has some good people in her her cabinet that are doing their darnest to try to manage state government. Now, again, but some of this stuff's set up by not having hard bids, you know, entering into bad deals on the front that end up coming back to bite you.
Well, with the governor and, you know, some of the stuff going on, I mean, 10 years, she's gonna, if she finishes out, Senator, she will have been the longest serving consecutive governor. And I know this is, I don't know, like, what you want to make of this, but like, what do you think her like crowning achievement is? And do you think that's why we're kind of hanging on here, that she just got this unfinished business to finish up and maybe have something to hang her hat on?
Well, I think she's going to, you know, she finishes her term. I hope she does. You know, I think she'll have gone down. Obviously, it's not only the longest serving governor, but somebody that's had a you know, administration that's been pretty much free of any kind of corruption. There have been a few, obviously, hiccups with some of the departments and the way things have happened. I think if she goes through without expanding Medicaid, which will cost, you know, billions of dollars to the taxpayers of the state of Alabama, that would be a very important notch for her. I think that she's done things with, you know, infrastructure. I don't necessarily agree the way it happened or what happened, and I'm not agreeing with the way the money's being spent, because I think we have a, with all due respect to John Cooper, I don't think we use the best formulas for deciding which roads get constructed and what the priorities should be.
Well, do you think we use it on that? Do you think we use any formula at all? I think it's all political.
They're formulas, but I do agree that it's, you can't take the politics out of politics, and you can't take the politics out of dividing up, you know, other people's money. But yeah, there are formulas about traffic and stuff like, you know, things like that. But regardless, there should be like I-65. Again, these are federal interstates, I-10, federal. And here we are, you know, spending state funds to enhance projects that should be paid in large by the federal government. But there is a lot of politics. It's a way that a chief executive can use their office, not just the bully pulpit, but can use their office to, you know, to distribute projects to people that are loyal to her and that support her initiatives or his initiatives.
Right. Well, I mean, we'll see how this plays out. And you know, this kind of silly season. Last thing I want to get to, my friend at the RSA, David Bronner, and, you know, like, philosophically, we disagree. He's a liberal. I'm conservative. But, like, I'm bothered by this, that they think there's this need for, like, us on the conservative side, Senator, start coming up with solutions to the problems of the state. But I don't think that's our responsibility here. And the other thing, the component to this is, like, the solutions, these big government solutions are not feasible, that we have Republican supermajorities, we have Republican constitutional officers in every statewide office, And the idea that you could implement some kind of like big government, you know, what socialism or whatever, to fix these woes, it's just it's been soundly rejected by the voters in this state.
Well, Jeff, but again, you know, there's parties and there's philosophy, and you know, there's beliefs and things that people stand for, which to me are more important. And that's where we are offering. We should offer solutions like hard bids, like not expanding into broken healthcare systems. You know, by requiring accountability and by having a more transparent system when it comes to where the roads and bridges are built. There are things that can be done philosophically to address the inefficiencies of government, but not doubling down and doing more of the same. And, you know, Dr. Bronner's had some good achievements. He also he's done some things to enhance the state, which probably weren't necessarily the best investments for his responsibility, which to make sure he has enough money to live up to the obligations of the retirees in this state and the education and the, you know, state employees. And, you know, the state of Alabama spends $1 billion a year to shore up that retirement system, making contributions. And it still, you know, depends a lot on what the markets do. A lot of his investments that have it, they may have enhanced the state, give us a good appearance, but they haven't necessarily given the returns, i.e. golf courses and some of his, you know, properties. But, you know, the money's not there to necessarily pay these benefits. So, you know, Dr. Bronner should have his plate full focusing on what he does. But I, as a conservative, do think that we do need to offer and always espouse, you know, I'm a Reagan Republican, and I think that there's philosophy and there are things that matter and that we need to try to talk about, you know, free market and free enterprise solutions and have accountability and insist upon, you know, honest, well, in government with integrity and transparency.
Let me just say this, and we'll wrap it up on this. We're already long, but like to me, the phenomenon of David Bronner, everybody sings his praises, is what a great job he's done for the retirement in Alabama, the pensions. But like his power isn't that he's this great investor. He makes okay investments and they get a return on investment. But he uses those investments to build up this political capital, and that political capital, he's able to go to the legislature and say, hey, I need this much money to shore up our pension, and he builds up the – it's all – he's using the state pension to build up his own political power, and he's using his political power to build up the state pension. It's just this weird sort of perpetuating thing that people give him credit for. And I reject is, you know, that's fine if that's the way we're going to do it here. But like coming after stuff that's, you know, very ancillary to that core mission, he doesn't need to be involved in that.
Well said, Jeff. Ditto. And, you know, the pensioners, though, they vote and, you know, they're very active and are concerned about making sure that they get their benefits. And of course, they're always wanting COLAs. But unfortunately, you know, we've tried to hold those back to, you know, just an annual bonus when the years were good. We don't need to offer COLAs. And to Bronner's credit, he is opposed to those because he understands how he's upside down and we can't afford COLAs. But you said it. He you know, uses the RSA and the power and the money and all the things that go along, you know, the retirees.
Right.
He uses all that for his political enhancement.
Yeah.
You know, and he's somewhat the royalty of the state of Alabama that doesn't run for office.
Senator, we got to leave it there. We're way long, but thanks for coming on.
You're welcome, Jeff. Have a great day. Stay warm.
Thanks. Bye-bye. Former State Senator Trip Pittman there. We'll be right back. This is FM Talk 106.5.
It's good to see you. A ragged rebel flag flies high above it all, popping in the wind like an angry cannonball. Now, walls of history are cold and steel, but they still smell the power. It probably always will. And on the old town square, under the barbershop pole, they set me up.
Welcome back to the Jeff Moore Show on FM Talk 106.5. Give us a text here, 251-343-0106. We're going to be wide open in the next segment. And I got a bunch of these to read off to you. We'll get to those in due course. We're a little along with the senator there, a former senator. But somebody who's a little like-minded every now and then that I can vent to. And you get to hear that, which is like, I don't know, a bonus for you, I suppose, if you're tuned in for that. But the way our state government functions right now. I don't really know how it functions. I have some ideas, but I'm not really sure in its totality how it goes. We'll get more into that. We'll respond to your text, and we'll talk about some other things going on around the world in the next segment. Stay tuned. This is the Jeff Porter Show on FM Talk 106.5. Alabama Blue.
Pocket to the shores of Orange Beach and all points in between. An insider's perspective on Alabama politics. It's the Jeff Poor Show.
I don't think Hank done it this way. No.
Welcome back to the Jeff Poor Show on FM Talk 106.5. Thanks for being with us on this Thursday morning, 251-343-0106. You need to be in touch with me, your show host. You text me, and we will proceed accordingly. Underway right now, a couple of things. The Carter funeral still going. I believe Walter Mondale's son, or no, former advisor Stuart Eisenstadt is now speaking. They had Gerald Ford's son, Walter Mondale's son. Now Gerald Eisenstadt saying a few words about the late Jimmy Carter. But meanwhile, up in, or down, or I guess out west, they are another press conference underway by Los Angeles County on these fires. You know what I said earlier in the program, kind of thinking about this, could be like a real shifting point. We could be moving, or the left is having to realize there's consequences associated with their philosophies. You guys, listen now. The culture drives the politics. So for the last 20 years, we've been inundated with sort of these left-wing platitudes. I mean, I guess it kind of really, really picked up with the election of President Obama. But we were told, look, this is the world we live in. The United States has made a shift to the left. And they didn't really tell us that they didn't ask us if it was okay. They just told us this is what had happened. But I think the country as a whole said, no, we're still probably where we've always been. And that's how Donald Trump gets elected twice. Despite the second time, despite two impeachments. And a 34-count felony conviction. They raided his home. He had low approval ratings leaving in 2021. Still got elected. Why does that happen? Does any? I mean, like, seriously. Why? You know, like, the country was not where we were told it was. Is why? Isn't the economy as much? What is? I mean, it's the economic policies are sort of the symptom. The economy is part of it, but the big picture is like the product of the big picture is the economy. Well, watch this California fire, and it's still going right now, by the way, and all the fire hydrants are dry. And there's like reels of video of Donald Trump talking about from years ago, bringing water down from the mountains, the ice caps, into the populated areas along the coast. Him actually talking about it, standing there with Gavin Newsom, talking about clearing brush. I don't know if this is applicable, but people see that and say, well, why didn't we try some of this? It's better than what we got right now. What do we have to lose? But these little things add up. Anyway, that's on the radar, and see where that goes. 251-343-0106. I'm going to get through these texts real quick. They've been outstanding. Rock and roll doctor, whatever happened with your dust-up with David? I'm better than you, Bronner. Not too much. It was very peculiar because in his newsletter he sends out every month, he came after 1819 News, 1819news.com. He came after Alpha. He came after the Alabama Policy Institute. But basically, you know, that we were so opposed to gambling. And the reason I'm making a big deal is because he said it by name. But in addition to that, he wrote a letter to Lanyap, who I've been writing a column for Lanyap for 20 years. For 19 and some change. 19 and a half years. Just 20 years rolls off the tongue so well. And he's like, well, this guest op-ed. No, I'm like a columnist there. But anyway, I guess he caught wind of it and wrote a letter to the editor, which we publish at Lanyap, the letters to the editor generally. So there's like two salvos there coming at yours truly. And you're like, kind of like, well, where did this come from? Why is this like one of the most powerful guys in the state, probably more powerful than some governors have been, like suddenly interested in conservative thinking about what's going on what at the grassroots level when it comes to some of these state issues? To me, I just think our priorities are way out of whack. But anyway, that's what's going on. It's just, I guess we're waiting for him to respond, and we'll see. I'll wake up one morning, and there'll be a severed horse head in my bed or something. I joke, I think. Pat. Biden Gavin Newsom is allowing these fires to show Hollywood wackos who's the boss, just like Trump was an insurrectionist. That's an interesting take. I don't think it's going to work. I mean, the governing power in California, they derive their power from Hollywood and from Silicon Valley. That's who runs the state, essentially. It's California. And, you know, I think Hollywood, that was always the puzzle piece that you didn't think you could ever make any headway with. Because Silicon Valley, you see like the Elon Musk even, but you saw like Mark Zuckerberg, you see it moving. You see like these tech guys are like saying, well, you know, we don't need threats from government or this chilling effect, this implied threat from the federal government telling us, you know, you better adopt our politics or, you know, something bad might happen. I don't know what could happen. But that was always the implied threat for like a Nancy Pelosi or whatever. But then that Trump wins and they're like, well, maybe that's not as big of a threat as we thought it was. And you see it moving back to where it probably wants to be. It'll always be left of center. Always be left of center, but it's not going to be this, like, let's create the perfect utopia here through government fiat. So put that aside. And then the other parts, the political establishment, you know, it goes back and forth. But high finance, like all these elite institutions in America, the church, even moving to the left a little, and I think that's getting some pushback. But Hollywood was never going to be like, oh, we see where things are. We need to do a self-correction because they would double down. I mean, watch the late night shows after the election. There was no like, how did this happen? It was like, oh, you stupid Americans. But now they're going to get, when they really need it the most, when they really need help from the government the most, they're going to get they're going to see what the fruits of their labors have produced. I think they're going to be totally underwhelmed that government is not a deity. It is not something that can just snap its fingers and make everything work. That it really takes people to make things work. Government can help, and government mostly needs to stay out of the way and not try to complicate things. Right now, it's very complicating. or will when they try to rebuild. I'm telling you, they have all these ideas about environmentalism. What do you think it's like getting a building permit in California right now? And they're going to find this out the hard way. But that's where the people who are impacted are the ones who, like, write the music we listen to on the radio, write the scripts for the movies we watch on TV or the sitcoms or whatever. And you notice this. I mean, this is not a, like, post-Katrina moment in America where it was George W. Bush doesn't care about black people or whatever. It is like, where the hell is our mayor? Why don't we have water into fire hydrants? Like just compare the two tragedies, the two natural disasters. And in 05, they came down hard on Bush. Heck of a job, Brownie, right? And then that was like a battle cry. That was like, remember the Alamo. This right now, watch this, guys. This is not a small thing. These cultural left-wingers are starting to turn on the Democratic Party. And realizing that, like, yeah, it's kind of cool to talk about all this in the theoretical, but now we got to move on to the practical and get on with our lives. And the theoretical is not going to work. It only works on paper. It doesn't work in the real world. And I think there's a lesson. It's a teachable moment, as the late Rush Limbaugh used to say. It's an unfortunate teachable moment, but that's what it's going to amount to. You know, L.A. was always already teetering on the brink. You know, like just homelessness, the crime, the you know, public safety, the infrastructure that never got fixed. And they're too worried. You know, they're spending their time on LGBTQ issues and abortion and all these national sort of cultural issues and not on, like, just making the trash pickup on time. But L.A.'s like, you know, it's a very tribal city, if you can imagine. And there's all neighborhoods and, you know, the haves and the have-nots. And everybody kind of lived in their own little bubble. But that's not going to be, they're not going to be able to anymore. In some parts of that city that have enabled these Democratic Party politicians to run the show. I don't know, like, the rest of California may stay the rest of California. I mean, San Francisco could stay the rest of San Francisco, but look, it was already kind of teetering. And then, like, what happens in California? This is, like, why they have these, like, California emission standards. They try to set the pace for the rest of the country by the biggest state in the union, the most populated state in the union, adopting its own criteria for your products, or mandating that you can't have combustion engines anymore or whatever. They think that by doing that, they could, you know, end the combustion engine across the country because they have all the purchasing power, and they're trying to force upon the rest of the country their views on everything. But I think people now that are there, like, you need to stop thinking globally and start thinking locally. And this is a hard lesson for them to learn. They're going to have to figure it out. Nostra took $7.5 million from their budget. Probably like FEMA has no money because they spent it all on illegal immigrants. That shouldn't even be here. Where are the illegal immigrants? This is a very voice to texty, so try again. You never say never, Tuberville. Talk about Tuberville running for governor. I don't know what's going on there. I mean, I get conflicting messages. I'm just telling you, like, people in that orbit tell me one thing, and then somebody else from that same orbit will tell me something else. This is not a self-licking ice cream cone. Tommy Tuberville wants to run for governor. He should run for governor. If he does it, he does it. Maybe he's still making up his mind. Only just saying this, he's looking at it, I think. Whether he does or not, I don't know. But if he does, it's going to be very tough to beat him. We'll be right back. This is FM Talk 106.5.
Welcome back to the Jeff Horst Show on FM Talk 106.5. Thanks for staying with us on this Thursday morning. 251-343-0106. Parker Griffith. I know he's your favorite. Coming up in the next segment, so stay right where you are. Ben, I wonder how much has the term built to California emission standards cost us over the years? I just always think of Bob Barker on the Price is Right. Remember that? Every time, you want a new car! Yeah. California emissions! And I like at like the 1980s, staying home sick from school, watching The Price is Right. Tim, Jeff, would you have to admit, Connie... Hey, Tim, come on, man. Mommy issues. So Ivy makes bad deals in the same breath. She says she's a good governor? Come on. Also says, although it displeases me to agree that California has brought into a collusion philosophy that has failed miserably, however, tell me when the government or local doesn't take care of its elite first. Look at the fires in Hawaii as a perfect example of the taking care of the elite. First of all, I'm not disputing that. But I'm talking, when we talk about, I think the elites are going to find out that even if the government takes care of them, they're going to find out that it's not, they're not really good at what they do. There's going to be some hard truths here. So it wasn't necessarily that. I mean, that the, you know, hey, they're going to get taken care of first. But no, that I think the elites are going to be underwhelmed. Mommy issues about the, or James, I should say, are going to be underwhelmed by the government's response. And I think that's going to, like, matter. Look, it's going to be, it's going to be this awakening that we don't really, you know, the all these ideas and all this, it takes a community, and, you know, we all work together as one and we are our best us or whatever. That stuff, all those bumper sticker slogans aren't applicable. Because people will just want to get their lives back to normal and they'll say, screw all this stuff. Now, I mean, it doesn't go away permanently, but I honestly, I think it will make you think twice about it. Jeff, that's how Dems rape the taxpayers' perpetual doom, gloom, and fear. But when the actual doom comes, then what? You're right about that. They cast a lot of fear. Literally, just look at the 2024 election, and you know Donald Trump wins. He's never going to leave office. He's an authoritarian. He's a Nazi. He's going to round us up and put us in camps. Do these people really believe that? Because if they did, if they believed what they were saying during the 2024 campaign, they'd already be in Europe right now. But that's what they do. That's what the Democratic Party has been doing. The Republicans do it too. I'm not trying to make excuses, but we're having a discussion about Democrats. They use the fear and they use the doom and gloom to try to force an outcome or try to enable an outcome. But when the actual doom happens, like say something does happen, what they show is they don't really have a good response. I mean, government in general doesn't work well, but you find it like Republican administrations and conservative governance, at least in some ways, works better. There's exceptions to all of this, but overall, if you're in a storm situation, if we're in Mobile, Alabama, and there's a Category 5 hurricane that blows through here, do you want a Republican president or a Democrat president? What do you think is going to be the best for our city?
The
And I just, maybe it's inherent in me being a right winger, but I don't know about Democrats right now. We'll be right back. This is FM Talk 106.5.
On a freight train leaving town, not knowing where I'm bound, and no one could change my mind, but Mama tried.
Get on me, want to know, Hank, why do you drink?
Welcome back to the Jeff Porch Show on FM Talk 106.5. Thank you for staying with us on this Thursday morning. 251-343-0106. If you want to be in touch with me, your show host, all you got to do is text. And kind of on an assortment of tangents this morning, but that's usually how the show goes when the show only show prep you do is just being plugged into the news all the time. Joining us now, speaking of guys who are plugged into the news, the official Democrat response to the Jeff Porch Show. Always a pleasure to have my friend, former Congressman Parker Griffith with us. Congressman, good morning. How you been?
Good morning, Jeff. We've been fine. It's going to be cold up here in the north and down in the teens. Everybody's got their faucets dripping and the hoses unhooked and hope for the best. I hope that we get the snow and maybe it'll melt off before it ices over. But some of these county roads are going to be awfully dangerous. I think the schools will probably be closing on Friday, maybe closing this afternoon, maybe already closing. But it's wintertime. And anyway, we're kind of glued to the radio. Radio is one of the only forms of communication out in L.A. now that really gives you up-to-date news and what's going on. And I'm proud of that because I'm a big fan of radio. And
well, I would hope so, right?
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. But anyway, I'll tell you, the convergence of Trump's election and Trump's desire to be a change maker, plus events of New Orleans and Los Angeles and other events, not to mention Gaza and Ukraine, et cetera. This is very, very interesting time for us to be tuned in to what's going on. I mean, it's Super Bowl news time. It's great stuff. We don't know how it's going to shake out. We don't know how this movie ends, but we know some of it's going to end well and some of it's going to end poorly. But I think for the political aspects of this, I think the mayor of Palisades and the governor of California is toast. I mean,
well, I've been talking about this morning, and give this some thought, Congressman, but these people in California, they've really kind of bought into the whole program of these liberal ideas and these liberal values and the power of government as a force for good in the world and so on and so forth. But I think these elites that enable a lot of this to happen in California, what's happened over the last 30, 40 years in that state, are getting a hard dose of reality right now. Now, I don't think, you know, California is going to turn into a red state anytime soon. Don't get me wrong. But I think the left in America has overstepped. And I think this cultural moment right now where you do have the people who write the music we listen to on the radio, the sitcoms we watch on TV, the movies we watch at the theater, are getting this hard dose of reality right now that, yeah, all this stuff, it kind of works in theory and it's fun to talk about. But you need government to perform certain tasks, and if they're too busy trying to figure out like the right cisgender bathroom for elementary school kids, and they're not keeping the fire hydrants full of water, that's a problem. And I think you're gonna see. I don't know. It's gonna be like I said. You're gonna see California go red anytime soon. But I think some of this craziness that we've been, like, you know, the left's been infatuated with, for the last maybe decade or so is going to start kind of subsiding.
I think so, too. I think you and I talked months ago about this woke business and recognized that it was a bunch of BS. But the real maturation here, I think, is going to be in our minority communities that think that they've got to vote for a skin color, and I think that's going to change dramatically because we're seeing failures in our own cities here in Alabama, certainly failures out in California, Houston, et cetera. I think America is beginning to say, let's get back to merit-based voting and not stereotype voting.
Well, Congressman, was always this war on meritocracy on the left. Your best foot forward and all of that. Well, sometimes we had to give somebody else a leg up. And there was this war on meritocracy. I think that people will just want to get back to their normal lives in L.A., and they're not going to care. Meritocracy, it's just the laws of the jungle, right? The laws of nature will say, well, we want the path of least resistance. Screw all this, like, you know, the social engineering, diversity, employment, environmental concerns and all that. And then they're going to say, this is what works. This stuff over here is fun to talk about, but we were wrong, okay? We can still have these values and appreciate all this stuff we're trying to do with the culture, but we can't mandate it using the force of government.
You never heard Saban talk about DEI. You never heard Saban talk about diversity, equality, and inclusion. He talked about the ability to understand the system and to perform. And I think we watch that on TV and the pros. We watch it on college football, basketball, et cetera. And while we can't apply it to our everyday government, is an indication that we got off the track and we were doing too many head pattings, compassionate, feel-good crap, and our cities were going to hell. And I believe that Democrat or Republican, mainly Democrat, it was responsible for that. Now, we got an affirmative action guy on the Supreme Court that needs to step down, and we're seeing the last vomit of affirmative action. I think we recognize that it was wrong. It was not based on merit. It did more harm than good. And I know there are others that will disagree with me, but I think merit is what put America on the top, and merit will put us back there. But we need to get back there, and I'll say this with all Trump is going to bring a new perspective. Now, the thing that bothers me about Trump is, he wants to be an entertainer and not a manager, and he needs to pick out one or two things to do, and quit. He's all over the map, and he needs some victories in the Senate and in the House right off the bat. He needs some victories on immigration. He needs some victories on tax, and of course others. But he needs to stay focused, and that's hard for him. But he has riveted our attention on the fact that America has been off the track. And I know my Democratic friends, and I've got one, I think, maybe two, but my Democratic friends.
But still, they haven't abandoned you yet, have they, Congressman?
Well, some of them have, But the truth of the matter is that the far left and the far right does not accomplish anything in America. The far right ditch and the far left ditch is littered with wrecks, sayings. Some of your listeners probably remember the Tea Party. Didn't have anything to say. They just were screaming, whining, and crying. But we got to get back to merit. Let's find a goal and let's achieve it.
Well, I think it's this, and you and I have talked about this in the past, Congressman. The whole phenomenon of Donald Trump, and my complaint the first time around, and I still think it's true, that your friends on the left, they just don't want to take the time to understand, like, how is this possible? How is it possible for this guy that we have demagogued, we have dragged through the mud, impeached twice, done all of this too, and he still gets elected with the popular vote of all things, not just some blood.
Yeah,
but there's not a critical analysis of like why this has happened. But I think the big picture is like the real overarching thing about Trump is that it's just kind of like a return back to it's everything going on in the culture right now. All these like the reprises of like Top Gun and everything. There was like a better time. Everybody looks like in the 80s or the 90s as like a heyday for some reason. And I think like Trump is like a return to that in their mind, like that America and saying Merry Christmas. And it's not necessarily like one government policy or, some of it's immigration, but that's just to get things back to where they were pre, border influx or whatever. But it's a return to what felt to be like a normal time in America. And the left doesn't want to, they don't even have that discussion. They just racist, homophobe, bigot, whatever. And until they come to this like time where they just got to sit down and like block all that out and try to understand that most of the people in this country aren't where they are on a lot of things, they're still going to lose elections.
I couldn't agree with you more. I use that as a physician. You go to the bedside and there's a fever, there's a rash, there's nausea. You know that the patient is sick, but you don't know why. Okay. We know we needed a change. We're not sure what exactly is going to happen, but we know what we were doing. We were sick and things were not working well. And whatever philosophy we adopted 20 years ago, and pushed by the elite, and the elite, and there were elite Democrats who absolutely abandoned the real working class Democrat who migrated. They were political immigrants who migrated over to the Republican Party en masse, and that's why they did. They knew something was wrong. They saw the rash, they saw the fever, they saw the nausea, and they said, "I'm not sure what's wrong, but I know one thing: whatever we've been doing is not right. It's not working. It's not how America became America, and we want to change." Now, will Trump follow through? I think so on some of the things he wants to do. I think it'll be tough, but he's changing the mindset of America. Right. There's a lot of Democrats that are having to look in the mirror and say, hey, we've been on the wrong track. So anyway, it's good.
One more thing about Trump, and then I got to talk about Jimmy Carter real quick before we got to get out of here. But on the Trump question and Democrats, do you expect it to be anything like Trump's first term where it was just oppose everything? Like it didn't matter if Trump wanted a resolution stating that the sun was hot, the Democrats would have opposed it, that there was no virtue in Donald Trump. I'm not expecting kumbaya or anything like that, but I think that if they oppose him to the degree that they opposed him before, they run into some problems.
I don't think they will. This man won the popular vote, not just the Electoral College. I mean, he won the popular vote. And politicians pay close attention to that. And I think you'll see a significant number of Democrats who are going to evaluate the policies that he puts forward and give them a fair hearing. And many are going to agree to support them. That whether it's tax policy, immigration policy, Ukraine, Gaza policy, I think you're going to see some Democrats or a significant number of Democrats
be thoughtful and not just knee-jerk into no. That's one of the problems with polarization. You know, if you're so wedded to your label, whatever you got written on your T-shirt, whether it's Republican or Democrat, if you're so wedded to that, that you can't change your mind, then you're not going to be of much help to your organization, to your political party, or to your country. And if you're blindly following
right.
some kind of philosophy that says, I'm this and I'm not that, and I'm not going to listen to anybody that doesn't agree with me, I think that's completely un-American. And I think you'll see some Democrats recognize that they're not going to be reelected if they're just saying no like they did in that first term.
Real quick, Jimmy Carter, you come from that neck of the woods of the Democratic Party, I would think, you know, kind of Southern Democrat. You look for something good to say about Carter, but it's kind of tough.
Well, Carter drew a bad card when he was in the president. He had this philosophy born through the Baptist church. I cannot tell a lie. I'm going to tell the truth. I'm going to do this. I'm going to do that. Well, that's not good politics. That's not good management of a country. Our best Democratic manager was Bill Clinton. But Carter was not that. And then the Iranian hostages, inflation. When I built my first medical office, my last loan was at 18%. 18% prime. And they'd only lend it to me for 90 days. I mean, that's bad. That was bad stuff in 1980. Volcker was wringing inflation out of the economy.
Right.
And of course he killed the real estate business, et cetera, et cetera. But Carter was a good man. Now, was he a good manager? No. Was he a good president? No. Did people vote for him, or did they vote against who he was running against?
Well, they voted against Nixon, who Ford inherited the baggage. And cause
there you go.
And this is like real quick because we're really way long here. But it's like FDR happened, and that was certainly an overreach in the size and scope of federal government. Everything that kind of plodded along since then, you know, with the exception of LBJ, but Kennedy wasn't exactly, you know, a traditional Democrat. Right. Carter was a Democrat, but his blip on the radar was that he was a response to Nixon. You didn't get the Democrat Party back to where it is. Where it was at the beginning of the last century until Bill Clinton came along.
That's right. Yeah, absolutely. So,
anyway, hey, yeah. Congressman, we're way long here. I'm sorry I cut you off, but thanks for coming on this morning.
All right. You guys stay warm. Stay safe. Thanks.
Stay safe up there. Parker Griffith, the official Democrat response to the Jeff Porter Show. We'll be right back. This is FM Talk 106.5.
They say can't be done. We've got a long way to go and a short time to get there. Just watch old bandit run. Amarillo by morning, up from San Antonio. Everything that I got is just what I've got on.
Welcome back to the Jeff Porter Show on FM Talk 106.5. Thanks for staying with us. On this Thursday morning, still to come, our good friend Rusty Glover, former state senator, will be with us. So please make sure you stay tuned for that. Hi, Jeff. This is from an unnamed texter. I love your show, but will you please play some heavy metal songs coming from your commercial breaks? Don't you believe in DEI? Yeah, it's probably not going to happen. I like a little. I mean, my music tastes aren't necessarily just this bumper rotation, okay? I'll say this, though. It's a very eclectic music taste. And I studied music a little at Auburn for about a year and then decided that was not really where the future was for me. But there's an appreciation of it. And this I find just to be kind of more the on brand with the format of the show.
but you probably won't get that in this bumper rotation. If you're riding with me in the car, yeah, probably. Pat, unless my kids are in the car, and I'm making my son learn like all these kind of classics. Like he's learned the David Allan Coe songs. He's learning some Jimmy Buffett. And he goes and he gets his little schoolmates singing along sometimes even. Pat, all these elites have insurance for everything they own. I sincerely doubt they're waiting on government to help them. They'll just move into another house they own. No, that's not true, though. It was like scorched earth, literally scorched earth in these places. And these people will, I mean, this is where they grew up. Pat, I don't think it's that easy to walk away from this for them. So anyway, 251-343-0106. Hit us up on that text line. We'll get a lot more of your text in the next segment. This is the Jeff Moore Show on FM Talk 106.5.
I keep a close watch on this heart of mine. I keep my eyes wide open all the time.
Sitting here at the Floribam, about to open up a big old can. Good times, unwind, falling and out of love in the same dollar. Can't say I got a whole lot of cares. I'm in the redneck Riviera.
Welcome back to the Jeff Moore Show on FM Talk 106.5. Thanks for staying with us on this Thursday. What's left of this Thursday morning? If you want to get in, 251-343-0106, we will take text, I guess, at the conclusion of the program if you so desire to reach out. Joining us now, it's been a little bit, but always like getting him on, a good friend of the program, a good friend of yours truly, former state senator Rusty Glover. Senator, good morning. How you been?
Good morning, Jim. Good to be on the program.
Hey, thanks for coming on. So talk to us a little bit. What you been up to since we last spoke?
Oh, just working hard. The program I have, we go to middle schools and high schools around the state, giving school assemblies with Mothers Against Drunk Drivers, state troopers, drug education council, and try to emphasize the importance of staying absent away from drugs and alcohol, and with the problems with fentanyl and other things that are going on out there. It's very important. The principals are now calling us many times to get us into the school so we can do these programs. And I primarily work the Mobile, Baldwin, and surrounding counties and the Wiregrass. But sometimes I'll go up to North Alabama or Central Alabama and do a program there. We have some other folks that do programs in other parts of the state. But we're going to do about over 170 programs this year, and it's keeping me busy. And I've been visiting schools also. When we don't have a program, I go and visit the schools and try to meet with counselors and the administrators to try to schedule a program so that we can get this message to the kids.
Yeah, well, it sounds like a very good cause, and I'm glad you're out there educating people. I mean, like, it's something I probably would have gotten some use out of when I was at that age. Let's talk about some other things. And you and I were talking on the phone yesterday about this. The where we are with changing the clocks every 6 months, daylight savings time, standard time, going back and forth. Well, you know, Donald Trump's talking about that now. There's a bill underway, I think, in the Senate right now, in the U.S. Senate, that is. But not too long ago, you were kind of leading this charge as well, and knowing that, like, we want to lock the clock, but which standard or which time do we want to adhere to is the question.
Yes, and it was around 2014, 2015, and I originally had a bill, then it turned into a resolution, and I got on board with some other states. Other states were passing bill resolutions in the legislature encouraging Congress to make the change. And after about 3 years, I finally got it passed. It was enormously popular amongst the people. In fact, I can honestly say that at least 95% of the people who contacted me or I talked to were very much in favor of this. You have the kids get to spend more time outside playing, which is very important for them after school. There's activities that can take place after work. Not driving home after, you know, during, after work in the dark. I even talked to realtors that told me that, you know, in the winter months, we can only show homes on the weekend because people aren't willing to take off work or able to take off work for us to show homes except on the weekend. We can do this with an extra hour in the afternoon. We can possibly do some of this in the afternoon. You know, it's things we don't even think about that, that could be affected. And this 4 months in the dark in the afternoon is no reason for it. And so that's why I pushed forward. And we finally did get it passed the last year I was in the legislature.
Well, how did we get here? And there's a history to be told here. Was there ever really a tangible benefit for people in this state, I guess?
Well, I believe it was 1916, the Germans, during World War One, instituted it, and then 2 years later, the United States did this. And this was to have more daylight hours in the workplace, and it would save energy. But that's what it was for originally. That's why it was put into place, daylight saving time. And what my resolution did, as well as other resolutions around the country, was to create a new standard time. Now, what that meant was that we weren't going to do away with daylight saving time. We were going to, once daylight saving times went into effect, which is March 9th, then it would stay at that, the clocks would never change. And then when it, you know, in November, when the time changes, generally goes to, like, it's 5 o'clock. It's dark at 5 o'clock. Well, it'd be dark at 6 o'clock. A little more activities could take place in the winter months. And the arguments, the ones that were against it, which was very few in number, were those who were concerned about the kids at the bus stops, which, you know, I can understand that. I can understand that as being a problem. But once you think about it, around mid-September, it varies. Different schools have different start times. But around mid-September, you start having kids in the dark at the bus stop. So it's not like if we make this change, we're suddenly going to turn the switch off. This is a transition that goes on from September on through the winter months. So it wouldn't be that much of a difference. In fact, people wouldn't even notice it anymore. I was talking to some county superintendents around the time that I introduced this. It was getting a little play around the state and with the media. And so they knew about it. They came to me and said, look, we love your resolution or your bill. We love this. We want this to happen. And don't listen to anybody talk about the bus stops. That will not be a problem. If it is a problem for that 2.5 months, we can adjust the bill schedule an hour and make up for it. Why did I say 2.5 months? Because if you think about it, during that 4 month period that we're in standard time, think about this. You have 2 weeks of Christmas, a week of Thanksgiving here, a week of Mardi Gras, other various holidays, teacher work days. You actually come out to about 2.5 months of actual school days that are affected. And school superintendent says, hey, we'll adjust the schedule an hour to keep everybody happy around the state, around the country or whatnot, you know, having that extra hour in the afternoon. So they were definitely on board of, you know, getting this resolution passed. So it really kind of takes out that argument about the kids on the bus stop. Again, they're already, most of them are already, not all of them, but most of them are already in the dark in mid-September, October, before we go to standard time. So it would not be like we're, you know, turning off the switch.
Right.
Whenever we, if we changed it.
Well, it's, I think, you know, I mean, you look at it now, are you surprised it's still around? Did we still do it this way? Because it does seem, yeah, very antiquated.
Very, very surprised. And even in 2022, the U.S. Senate passed the Sunshine Protection Act of 2022. They passed it 100-0, 100-0 in the U.S. Senate, and Nancy Pelosi sat on it. So that would give you an indication. If you can get those partisan beings in the United States Senate to come together and all vote for one bill, you know there's a lot of momentum. And Nancy Pelosi sat on it. And that bill would have been exactly what our my resolution, other state legislators' resolutions around the country, it would create a new standard time. Once we go to March 9th, as it is this year, we would stay on that time, and we would not be having the 4 months of darkness in the afternoon.
Yeah, once we spring forward, it stays there. You know, we won't not fall back.
One of the reasons I was often to discuss this was that there's been some media reports that Trump wants to stay on standard time. He wants to get rid of the daylight saving time, the switching, and that's got some people confused. What he's referring to is what the Senate passed, which would be where we, after daylight saving time goes into effect, we would not go off of that again. And that's because, I mean, all those 2 or 3 years that I was working on this, I didn't have a single person that said we need to stay on standard time. I mean, you know, it's bad enough to have four months of being in the dark in the afternoons. We sure don't want to switch from 4 months to 12 months. So there's a little confusion in terminology, but I think probably what he means is that we would not have the time change anymore. We go to what the U.S. Senate bill said, a new standard time where once we go into daylight saving time, it's permanent. It stays in.
Joined by former state senator Rusty Glover here on the program. Let's talk about the ongoing of One Montgomery, Alabama. Senator, you watch this stuff, and just your best guess, though, like we watched this gambling fight go on last year, and I thought it would be dead for the quadrennium. But am I off thinking this? I don't think it's going to happen in 2026 because that's an election year. And then who knows beyond that with a new governor, what that entails. So maybe they will bring it back this year. And the reason being that there's such a small window here, because if you don't get it through this window this time, it might not happen for another decade.
Yeah, that's right. It's not going to be in 26, the 25 session, which starts next month. I think there's a possibility. I really haven't talked to as many legislators as I usually do during the year this year, so I haven't talked to too many of them that have indicated that this is going to happen this year, this is going to be proposed. All I pretty much hear is from what I hear on your show and those being interviewed. So I really don't know what they're going to do, but I know that there is talk about it, and there is a possibility that it will definitely be brought up where it will have momentum to do anything.
Because I don't know that there's an appetite. I just think there were so many hurt feelings last year, and there were a lot of hurt feelings. And even if you're for it, you could be convinced. Do we really want to go through this? I was talking to one lawmaker. I need to explain it to me. They're like, look, it would have to start in the Senate. The House isn't going to do it again. But the last time the Senate put a bill out and they sent it to the House, it came back with a bunch of changes. It had Medicaid expansion in it and a bunch of crazy things. They're not going to want to go through that whole rigmarole again in dealing with whatever the House might do. The idea would be, well, we don't know that they will just accept what we give them at face value and vote it up or down. They would send it to conference committee, and then we have this, you know, this whole roundabout again. And that's going to make a lot of lawmakers very reluctant to take the plunge once again, I think.
Yeah, I think you're correct. I've never been a proponent of gambling of any kind, and I know there are some that are like that. I think most of them in the legislature are pro gambling. They are pro doing something different, and it's just what kind is what keeps the bill from actually going forward. But I think you're right. I don't think they want to get this tangled up. It did take so much of the energy out of the session last year that so many bills that they were working on, a lot of them local bills or bills that were statewide that pertained mostly to their area, they were lost in the shuffle because so much time and energy was put on the gambling issue that they were not able to get what they wanted accomplished.
What's changed? Doesn't it seem like The gambling discussions that we used to have when you were in the Senate or even before you were in the Senate, and now it's almost like it's going to happen eventually, It's like it's treated like this foregone conclusion. I don't know that it will happen eventually, but it just seems the players are different. The discussions are way different. I mean, this isn't like what we used to talk about when Siegelman was around pushing this stuff.
Well, the amendment failed, the vote of the people. And so for the first, and that was the year before, actually it was 3 years before I got to the legislature. And so there was really no talk of gambling, really. I mean, it would be somebody that would introduce a bill, you know, every 2 or 3 years or whatever, but it was not seriously considered at all. And so it was assumed that gambling was dead because, you know, the people voted it down. And then when it did come back up with all the scandal and the trials and the briberies and all of these things that were going on in 2009, 2010, people just assumed that it's never going to be brought up again. It's just tainted too much with scandal and corruption. And then once it came back up after I got out, well, actually, it was starting to come back up before I got out of the legislature. It came so close a couple of times that it gives a lot of momentum or confidence to those promoting it that it has a chance to pass. And I think you're going to see it, every other year or but probably not 26. But
well, it feels like this.
Years, it's going to be brought up.
Senator, it feels like this to me every single time they try it, that they get more aggressive every time. And, I mean, this isn't Del Marsh anymore getting the dog tracks and the Porch Creeks in a room together and trying to do something. They're getting more aggressive. They're adding sports gambling. They're creating big, big gaming commissions. The bill, just to me, it's not something you would expect out of a Republican supermajority, but we're past that point. I mean, it's a weird Republican supermajority, but the evolution here is this: every time they try and they get the momentum, they just overreach just slightly and it crumbles under its own weight every single time.
Hey, I think you're right. I think it goes a step further than it might have had it. You know, if there's a limit on how far they can go before it will fail, and they seem to overstep each time, and that's, I think you're right. I think you hit it right on the head. That's exactly what has happened.
Yeah. So people like you out there that just won a lottery, I mean, it's not the lottery that is losing. It is all the extra, all the hangers-on, all the trains hitched up to the locomotive there that are causing it to fail. But I maybe they'll figure it out. But anyway, we'll see. Hey, last question.
Before we go to something else, I want to make it clear, I'm not for any form of gambling. This is a terrible way to put up government, and even the lottery. It brings gambling to every convenience store in every district, and that's just, it's so,
right.
It's so destructive to the poor and the middle class, and puts the middle class into poverty. It's just, it's so destructive. But go ahead, what's the next?
What about you? What you got? You still looking at something in the future here, Senator?
Yes, I'm looking forward. Since the race for Lieutenant Governor, I was looking to run for the seat that I occupied before Senate 34. Jack Williams said that he would run one more term and then run statewide. So I said that's good, that's fine, and so I'm patiently waiting and looking forward to serving again. I've missed it quite a bit. And I look forward to the possibility, if I'm blessed to be brought back in by the citizens of my district, I will be looking forward to serving people.
Senator, you're always a gentleman. We always appreciate you coming on this program. Let's talk again soon.
Yes, sir. Have a great day.
You too. That was former State Senator Rusty Glover there. We got to get a break in here. We'll be right back. This is FM Talk 106.5.
Perhaps I may become a highway.
Inside my head, before I reached 30, I'd be dead.
Welcome back to the Jeff Plour Show on FM Talk 106.5. Thanks for staying with us on what's left of this Thursday morning. Come up tomorrow on the show, Todd Stacey, Alabama Daily News, and State Senator Chris Elliott, our returning champion, one of the guests to be named later. Watching Jimmy Carter make his last trip to Andrews Air Force Base, or now it's called Joint Base Andrews, for one last ride on Air Force One back to Georgia. You see, just, I don't know. We're all getting old. Let's see. Lawrence and Mobile, the medical community is opposed to this for health reasons. Let's see, what else do we got? Todd, how about let's trade Canada for California, spring forward and leave it. Fire Dog, so 106.5 Casino and Dell Jackson Museum in Owa is going to be delayed again. Damn Yankee, like the Beastie Boys used to say, it's sabotage. Unnamed Texter, hell, the government is killing the middle class. And then finally, Tony from Sims, Knox conservatives talk about totalitarian governments and communist governments being wrong for claiming to know what is best for the people instead of letting the people decide. Isn't that exactly what Rusty Glover is doing about gambling? People can decide. Don't vote Rusty Glover in. Or don't vote people like him in that don't, well, you know, we don't do, I mean, we do a little direct democracy only to change the Constitution. Because the Constitution needs to be hard and difficult to change. We don't do it that way for the sake of direct democracy to give you the right to vote. That's where these people are wrong. Every time they say, I'm just for giving the people the right to vote. But that's a discussion for another day. Anyway, Midday Mobile coming up here in just a moment. Sean Sullivan from West Mobile. I got to get out of here. I will try to do better tomorrow. Sorry, Phyllis, I forgot to say goodbye. This has been the Jeff Porch Show on FM Talk 106.5. This is where